Gordon, how are you, sir?
Very well, how are you?
Good. Welcome to Atwood Unleashed.
Thanks very much for having me.
My pleasure. Whereabouts in Ireland are you?
I'm on the west coast, out by the seaside.
Sounds lovely.
It's
Are you...
very warm, as you can probably see, I'm melting.
Yep, having the same issue in England, so I'm glad we can both share that together.
Moist.
We'll see who's shiniest by the end of this discussion. I think I might have you pipped on that. We'll see. Tell us about those conspiracy guys.
It's a podcast that's been running since 2014, and we just passed 50 million career downloads over many different platforms since we started. So it's going quite well. We've got, average about maybe 4, 5, 6 hours per episode. They're comedy, history, little bit of, pop culture, a little bit of conspiracy theory, true crime. I like to, I don't know. Look a little bit deeper than the surface level conspiracy people when they're talking about like a certain topic or whatever. We go back into the books, we go back into the history, and it's like a re-examination of what we already know and push around the accepted narrative of events. It's good crack, Nick. It's
Excellent.
all. It's not so fucking serious. Like it's like how are you for swearing on this, by the way? I don't want you to get
Bad. You just nuked the channel. We're
dinged on
all
YouTube.
it's over now. Yeah. So
Just dropping
thanks for
N-bombs.
joining us. Well, I mean, it'd be interesting to get your a description of your perspective on conspiracy theories because it's, I suppose, the perfectly legitimate as fodder for covering in any way you like with humor, with scrutiny. But I suppose there's a line between sort of making commentary on conspiracy theories and promoting conspiracy theories. So, I mean, how do you feel you maintain a level of objectivity, or is it a case of anything goes? Or what's the angle you come in at on conspiracy theories?
Well, that's the thing. Like now, conspiracy theories, you see, right wing usually attached to it. You see far right, you see fringe lunatic, these kind of monikers that they give people who engage even in the conspiracy lore. I don't know, man. Like when you look at what was happening over the last 3 years, I don't even say it because the YouTube gods shall strike you down. But like the last 2, 3 years, people can see from the outset, hey, that's a bit, wait a second, that's not what we're being told. And then you change, after a while, time is the great healer, and you end up finding out after a while, after a few inquests and after a few, investigations, that stuff turns out to be then true. So like, I don't know, conspiracy theory has a bad name, and it started really, really ramping up in 2016 with Donald when he started, have you heard Infowars.com? Okay. And he started promoting that stuff and aligning with that narrative. Is my mic is crackling? That shouldn't be happening.
I'm hearing you fine. So I'm not sure. Maybe people in the chat, if they could let us know
I'm hearing you fine
whether
too.
they can all hear God. I think one gentleman's mentioned it, so I suggest John's jail journal blogs, but I might want to check his earphones. Maybe let us know, John. Keep us updated on that. But it's all good for everyone else, apparently. So
I'm feeling it's coming through fine on mine as well, so I don't know.
cool.
Apologies.
Okay. I mean, it's different. I
It's the
mean, I'm glad you
CIA, man. They're
mentioned
trying to the CIA are trying to get in and fuck up the broadcast. That's what it is.
trying
They're
to
like
shut us down already.
mildly annoying
Yeah.
interruptions.
I mean, it's interesting that you point to InfoWars and Alex Jones, though, because I mean, I suppose I do see a little bit of slapping conspiracy theory or the label right wing on people for any reason, but there is a lot of crazy conspiratorial nonsense out there in the same light. I mean, obviously InfoWars. You mentioned Donald Trump there, so I mean, I think I saw a video before of you guys a while back covering the sort of election and all the conspiracies surrounding that stolen election was thrown around. You talk about when the investigations are done and when the accounting's done, a lot of things turn out to be true. However, with the claims about stolen elections, that was either at best evidenceless or at worst completely false. I mean, are you kind of come down on any one side on that?
Like I would still say that there's some sort of shenanigans. Arizona and Carrie Lake and that kind of investigation was not really completed. There's right the way I kind of look at it, right, is that if there is at least some small amount of shenanigans, something should be looked into. I take it as read that the mainstream media are telling us lies. So pretty much like a rule of thumb would be most of the stuff that's on the news is most likely false, right? So if they're telling us one thing, maybe we should look for something else. The fact that it's being labeled as like seditious information, or like, you know, the way all the January 6th protests that turned into, you know, whatever, the storm in the castle or whatever turned into, like that was very much overblown. But it was like that false flag mentality of, oh my God, like they're coming to get us. And there's a lot of like falsehoods within that to push a narrative. And we've seen America and the CIA operate internationally to rig elections. We've seen them install like puppet leaders. We've seen them do all that stuff in other countries. So one would presume that they have the capabilities to be able to do that at home as well.
I mean, in terms of shenanigans, I think people, there is always attempts at voter fraud even, and they get caught out. I think the issue would be carrying out voter fraud on such a scale necessary to change the outcome of an election. It just seems, on the face of it, completely unrealistic. And I mean, the Capitol riots, I can kind of get on board with some of the hysteria surrounding that, people comparing it to 9/11, things like that. Yeah. But at the end of the day, the optics of it, the place of American democracy stormed by people who had been fed conspiracy theories about stolen elections. And, it was quite dicey. People did die. I mean, obviously, you know, it's fair to say the only person that was shot that day was somebody storming the Capitol. I mean, do you not think it could be dangerous for democracy in a sense? I mean, you say you don't believe the mainstream media, and it's always good to have a healthy skepticism of that. But I suppose I think it'd be far worse to believe everything that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth as well.
Yeah, I mean, do you trust any politicians?
No.
the man that was on the show just before me was like anti-monarchy. It's the same sentiment. Like if you say, like a year ago, if you were like, the Queen, like if you said that, you were in trouble. And now you're like, it's not so bad. You know, time ends up allowing you to talk more about that kind of stuff. And like, put it this way, right? Would you have thought like 15 years ago that there were any sort of shenanigans around, let's say, what was going on in Iraq and weapons of mass destruction and Dr. David Kelly and all of these things? Like 20 years ago, people were kind of dealing with the fallout of 9/11 and George W. Bush and going to war in Afghanistan and ended up going into Iraq. And like information comes out as time goes on.
The information that came out about Dr. Kelly, the coroner's report confirmed that he killed himself.
Yeah, but the conspiracy part of it is that did he really? You know, that's where you have, there's a leap of faith in conspiracy theory that I don't, I don't want to say the word because I'm very aware of YouTube and stuff like that, but there's a certain cabal of people who think that like JFK Jr. is going to come back and save it. I don't subscribe to any of that kind of, you know, malarkey, right? But conspiracy theories usually are maybe like a coping mechanism for people who don't believe the mainstream narrative, who are using an alternative narrative that suits their bias, that fits their belief structure, and allows them to continue on in a way that is comfortable for them without adhering to a mainstream a narrative for how their life is going, right? So like, take that certain letter, the 17th letter of the alphabet, that whole shenanigan, right? Those guys are being fed something that is like a deity, some kind of a resurrected kind of godhead from this very important family, the Kennedys. He's going to come back from the dead and he's going to save us all. And it resonates with like right-wing Christians who already believe that sort of thing, that there's a man, he's going to come back from the dead and save us. He died for us. You know, it sort of fits. And it's very easy to make up that narrative and pull people along in that direction. For what end? Maybe people are out to make a bit of money. Maybe there's a few shills out there Maybe well, there's somebody making YouTube dollars or, you know, Rockfin
just,
dollars.
Just to pivot to something that I know you've been covering a lot, and I'm sure the listeners and viewers want to hear about it, and that's the case of Michael Barrymore. It's something I haven't actually thought about for such a long time. And what is it about that case to you that makes it worth reinvestigating?
Well, the thing that kicked it off for me, like, I love Michael Barrymore from when I was a kid, you know.
Strike it lucky. Was it Strike It Lucky or Strike It Rich? Or was it both? I can't remember.
Both, yeah. They changed it over after a little while. And, like, I loved him. I was a comedian for a few years. And as a child, I used to do, you know, routines and stuff like that. And I love Michael Barrymore's kind of joie de vivre, the way he went down on the show. And I remember in the mid-90s, like, I was in my very early teens. And when he came out as gay, it was like, oh my God, such a shock. And we were in, like, I talked about this on the episode that we did, you know.
A gay person in show business.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Oh, it's Schofield. But what I'm saying is, like, at a time in the 90s when it was okay to be, like, calling people F-word and saying, like, if something was bad, it's like, oh my God, man, that those trousers are so gay. Like, to have it as such a derogatory term and yet have this guy who represented something that we all aspired to, that there was no... there was no disparagement about his sexuality at all. It was just Michael Barrymore. Whatever he did with his willy at night time was his own business. Like, we never did really thought about it, you know?
Was he out before the pool death?
Yeah.
Or was that what put him right? Okay, so he had come out as a gay man before the body was found in his pool.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, there was only a little bit of kind of press, you know, brouhaha. Mm. 1995... He came on stage at this, like, there was like a drag karaoke show, and he started singing a song like, start spreading the news, I'm gay today. And he took off his wedding ring and threw it into the crowd. And there was this whole thing of, like, his long suffering manager wife and stuff like that. And then it kind of went away for a while, and there was no real kind of like paparazzi following him around trying to get a salacious picture. He was out at night in London and, you know, giving it large and all the clubs, and then he was living in he was living further down south, and he was going to those kind of clubs, like a beachside, you know, vibe, and they kind of left him alone. It wasn't a massive deal, but of course when Stuart Lubbock died, this whole thing became like massively vilified. Like, all the headlines were like, man dies in gay orgy, like violent gay orgy in Barrymore's house, and all this, like, very anti-gay, it's funny we're talking about it in Pride Month, but all this very anti-gay rhetoric started coming around about Barrymore's sexual proclivities, whereas for the 4 years beforehand, it wasn't really a massive deal. It was just like, the minute somebody died, famously from something being rammed up his arse, like, that was the whole autopsy and the whole business of how he died specifically was very much like a violent gay act. That's how it was portrayed in the media, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, what, talk us through the official story of what happened here, because there have always been question marks hanging over Barrymore. I mean, to my knowledge, he was cleared of all charges.
Yeah.
But there have always been question marks or, you know, peculiar things, shall we say, that have gone unanswered. So what was the official story of what happened that night?
Well, they were at a nightclub called the Millennium Nightclub in Essex. And it's a place that they frequent, Barrymore and his cohort. You know, there's a few different hangers-on. And I suppose one can presume that there was more than alcohol being consumed, you know, in the heady days of the 90s, you know. Was it 24-hour party people or whatever, right? And he had a bunch of dudes that would hang around, including an on-again, off-again boyfriend. There was Justin and Kylie Merritt that were with him. And, these all came back. Kelly Campbell is another girl who came back to the house. Claire Jones came back to the house. And then a man called Simon Shaw and a local chef, James Footers. And they were all, like, hanging out in the club. And Stuart Lubbock was out for the night, and he saw Barrymore, wanted to meet him because he was a fan, and, like, his crowd organised it. They met, and obviously Barrymore was like, oh, right the back, like, I have a bit of that, and was like, do you want to come back to the gaff? And they all piled into separate taxis. Now, Barrymore's, like, partner at the time didn't get into the same taxi. Barrymore got into the taxi with Lubbock and a couple of others, And according to the taxi driver, who magically was able to be found and made a statement and everything, was saying that like Barrymore was being quite lascivious and a bit lecherous in the back of the taxi, and Lubbock was well out of it at that stage even. So like when those sorts of reports came out.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
It painted Barrymore as a kind of a sexual predator, but like realistically, it's kind of just the lads out in the lash. Like how many, you know, look at the pair on that. Like, it's like, how, you know, what's the difference if there's no murder at the end of it? Like, does anybody get in trouble for that sort of stuff, you know?
The murder did spoil the evening, didn't it?
I mean,
really did put a
dampener on it. I mean, I've woken up with a sore arse after a night's drinking myself, Stephen, but like not that bad. Do you know what I'm saying? but like, I mean, Lord of Mercy on Stewart, but like the whole thing from the Channel 4 documentary, which is The Body in the Pool, as they call it. This was, I think, kind of like a sob story and an attempt to reignite the case around Barrymore. You had Stewart's father, his long-suffering father, Terry, who was dying of various terminal illnesses.
I'm assuming the father doesn't accept the official narrative.
He doesn't anymore because he's dead. But spoiler alert for the documentary. But he didn't for years and years. And there was loads of, like, you know, contention about the findings of the original investigation. And then there was a second investigation. And Terry's bottom line is somebody knows something. Somebody knows something.
That's an interesting phrase.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, is it more a case of Barrymore was cleared because the facts and evidence were in his favour, or there wasn't enough evidence, or they couldn't find enough, or enough people weren't giving information in order to pin something on Barrymore?
Well, like, I mean, you guys are dealing in pretty serious true crime cases. You're talking to people who were involved in investigations. You're talking to people who were accused of crimes. You're talking to people who were had crimes attempted on them. A lot of times, evidence is mostly lacking. Do you know? I do find when we're looking at true crime cases here on Those Conspiracy Guys, that like TV would have you believe that a drop of cum somewhere, there's a pube under a fridge someplace, and that's going to go into a machine, and a load of faces are going to go, and it's going to pick up one dude's pubes. And he's the killer, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't really work like that. And that's,
so I don't have to keep picking up pubes.
No.
Anymore.
Just like, yeah. Stuck in the teeth. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't really work like that. Most of the time it's like association, it's you know, eyewitnesses, it's matching stories, it's in an interview, and then two weeks later, another interview, and a month later, another interview, and 6 months later, another interview, and then looking at the disparities between them and going, hang on a minute, there's something not right here. You match it up with something that, it's usually not like forensic DNA evidence that it gets somebody. It's usually not, some kind of new technology that cracks the case. It's a murder weapon that's found, or it's an eyewitness or a witness to the crime, right? And in this case, there was evidence missing. Right. So as soon as Stewart was found in the pool, he was found floating face down.
And this was in the morning after everyone woke up, isn't it?
This is like Ash, that they went back to the party at 4 and he was found just after 7. So like only a matter of a couple of hours. Right?
Okay.
And he was already kind of well dead. Like there's a phone call, a famous like 999 recording, and I think it was Justin Merritt called the police, and he was kind of dispassionately describing, like, oh yeah, you go send an ambulance, got these geezers drowning in the pool. And it was very like matter of fact, he's already after drowned. We're not doing CPR on him, like, he's brown bread. And it seemed kind of a done deal at that point. Like, they weren't like, oh my God, quick, send an ambulance. Like, and people would be roaring and shouting in the background and trying to do that, like, Mitch Buchanan, like, some people stand in the darkness, like, trying to pump him back to life. Like, it wasn't happening. And Barrymore had been told, yo, like, he's dead. Gather up some shit. And apparently Barrymore ran around, allegedly put some drugs, because there was drugs around the house, into a pillowcase. And there was a couple of bits, like the handle of the shed was missing. And the thermometer from the poo, from the jacuzzi was missing. So I don't know if you know those, like, floaty thermometers that you put into the hot water to keep it around, like, 38, 39. And it's a big yoke. Do you know what's a, it's a man-sized thermometer, let's just say, with a big yellow squeezy job. And it's missing, right? And that's suspicious enough in itself. The fact that somebody had said, yeah, like, they went around, they picked up a lot of stuff, and Barrymore fled the scene. So, like, when you see somebody running, there's a little bit of suspicion. You're going, what are you running for? Now, like, it's fully explainable by saying he's a famous dude. He had paparazzi following him. He was one of the most successful comedians in Britain ever at the time. Like, he was the top dog. He had, like, 4 TV shows running consecutively. He had a top interview show, do you know? The Michael Barrymore show. He had Strike It Lucky. He had Kids Say the Funniest Things. And these were all primetime shows, you know? And the next thing, there's a fella dead in your house. Of course you're going to bounce. You don't want to be pictured like that sad, you know, the sad face, like, or holding a towel and being like, oh my God, he's so wet and dead. Like, he knew that there was going to be paparazzi, so he just bounced. But why would he bounce and bring all that stuff? And then when they looked at...
What did the coroner's report... What did the coroner's report tell us about Lubbock?
So that's what I'm saying. When they looked at Stewart's body, particularly his bum, they were like, this destroyed was one adjective that was used. That, like, his anus was ravaged by an implement. It was, I think, what was eight or 10 times its normal size, something like that. And this is not me, like, being, you know, trying to be funny, like, hyperbole. The coroner said that his anus was the size of a large orange, and it didn't, like, redilate after death. Like, it was, like, left the size of an orange. So obviously, something seriously violent had been done to him before his death, right? And there was, like, evidence of, like, an implement being used. So why was the handle of the shed gone, and why was the thermometer from the pool gone? Obviously, one would assume that they were the things that were used to make the size of an orange. You know, like, so, like, all of these things that people would just put together, but there's no corroborating witnesses. Nobody at the party talked. There's so many people. Like, there was, I think, like, 8 people at the house, including Barrymore and Lubbock, and no one has said anything since. And it's, like, 23 years since the event. So, like, Terry Lubbock was going, somebody knows something.
What are their stories? I mean, there's a lot of people there. They'll obviously have been cross-examined. What are they saying? What are they saying happened?
Yeah, they're not saying anything happened. They're saying that all of a sudden, Stewart Lubbock was taking a load of drugs, and he was very, very drunk. And, you know, they all looked away for a minute, and when they turned around, he was face down in the pool. And everybody is kind of corroborating that story. Like I said, you're going and interviewing someone and interviewing them again and interviewing them again. Merritt, he said that he was the one that found the body, and Michael Barrymore said that he was the one that saw the body first. So, like, there's little discrepancies within the stories, but, like, everyone's smashed, and it's, like, 6 o'clock in the morning at the afters of a mad night out in Essex. So, like, maybe, like, taking testimony from drunk people is not the best thing to be doing, but it was half eight in the morning by the time the police came, and Barrymore was gone, and all these other people were kind of packing up to leave, and like, you know, what?
It's not the behavior of concerned citizens, is it?
Yeah. What can you ask them? Like, that they don't, like, what happened to your man? Oh, I don't know. He's just dead. And then everyone has the same story. I would imagine, like, with the kind of the gift of time, that somebody would be able to say something, would be able to give a little bit of extra information to close it off. If for any reason other than to completely exonerate Michael Barrymore and, like, get his good name back. Because after this, like, he couldn't, even though he was proved innocent, he couldn't stay in Britain. Like, he moved to Australia for years because it was the only place he could go to get away from all of this mad stuff. Like, people were calling him all sorts of names in the street, and it was, like, horrific. He tried to relaunch his career by doing, like, this, like, cabaret kind of show, but he wasn't into it. The audience wasn't into it. It was a bit shit. Like, it was a bit lackluster. And then he just went, I'm out of here. And he just bounced for 8 years to Australia. And now he's back and he's on TikTok and he's doing all the, you know, my life is a Wes Anderson movie. Like, all these memes that the kids are doing dances and shit. And he has, like, over a million followers on TikTok. So he's, like, up to influencer level. He'll never get what he had, but, like, he's back making stuff now using a new medium.
Yeah, I mean, it seems clear that the justice system's completely failed this young man.
Yeah.
His family must be absolutely desperate for answers. Does it feel like this is a closed case from an official perspective now? I appreciate people are always going to push, people are always going to be interested, people are always going to commentate, write about it. Are there any open channels of investigation still, or have the justice system completely drawn a line under this now?
As far as, like, a case can go, this case has gone. Terry was campaigning for 20-odd years before his death. And he died only there, you know, a year and a half ago, maybe. And if anybody comes forward with any new information, obviously the case gets a new lease of life and gets reopened. But, like, they're relying on somebody who's not a criminal or not the perpetrator to come forward and go, yeah, it was me. So if they're willing to stay silent this long to stay out of jail, obviously they're going to stay silent that bit more. But there's some, I don't know, man, there was a report that came out in March 2021, where they basically, do you know what defamation, do you know, like, when you defame somebody, you can defame someone without saying it directly, but if you give enough information that person can be identified, it still counts as defamation, you know, like in, those blinds, you know, the Hollywood blinds and stuff like that. So, like, the paper, one of the newspapers said that there's a man, a 50-year-old man was arrested twice before for this crime, but released with insufficient evidence and blah, blah, blah. And they gave all this, like, Cheshire Police information. And the only guy that would fit the bill as said by Chief Reporter Martin Robinson, the only man that would fit the bill would be Jonathan Kenny, who is Barrymore's lover, right?
Right.
And, like, that's kind of putting the pin on him, and they put it out in the paper hoping that someone come in and corroborate that, but they haven't yet. Like, it still could be fully solved and Barrymore would be exonerated and he'd be able to go back on TV. Loads of people on TikTok absolutely love him. They're all like, you should be on TV again. Restart up all of these shows. Like, all it takes is for someone to come forward from that cohort and say, yeah, was this guy. He's pretty much been pinned to the collar by the media anyway. So, like, I don't know why they're not doing anything about it. But as far as the courts can go, this is a case closed for now, you know. But with no result. So it's kind of a bit sad. Especially, I was such a fan of Barrymore and I see him on TikTok all the time and I'm like, he's loving life. But I think he knows something as well. So I don't know why he doesn't say himself. Maybe there's something that these people have on him. And we all know how that kind of goes, you know. That there's some reason that all of these people are in that conspiracy of silence. And that itself is a conspiracy. Like, why not say, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you think if that was something that happened to me and I was completely innocent, I wouldn't stop speaking about it.
Especially sure. If there's some dude that you don't know and it's 20 years later and you don't know him anymore and you're just like, fuck it. He was the one that done it. I'm Michael Barrymore. But, like, maybe that guy has something on him. Maybe there's a memory card somewhere, a small photograph or a collection of photo album or something with some shit on it that's making it be a conspiracy of silence, you know?
Let's hope somebody does come forward and fill in those blanks and do justice for Mr. Lubbock and his family, obviously, because it must be hard to consider as well. Not only is this an horrendous thing that's happened to somebody, it's also tied in with a celebrity. So there's always going to be public interest in it. It's always going to be in the news. You're always going to have relive it in some form or other. So I suppose any answers would be good at this point. But God, we just ran out of time.
Yeah,
so maybe you could just quickly tell us where we can find your content.
Yeah, all of my stuff is on thoseconspiracyguys.com. I'm on all the podcast apps and stuff like that. So if you want to come and find, like, take it with a pinch of salt. I'm not a crazy conspiracy person. It's, you know, it's all discussed in good faith and with a bit of humor and, you know, as much respect as can be had while also being trying to be funny. So thoseconspiracyguys.com. And I'm Gordo. Thanks for having me on.
Gordo, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Good night. God bless.
Take it easy.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.